This episode is made possible by our sponsors, CSU Ramzone, powered by the CSU Bookstore, Ginger and Baker, and Peterson Toyota. Peterson Toyota is your local Toyota dealer serving Fort Collins, Loveland, Windsor, and Tynmouth, and has been doing so for more than 50 years. Not only will you find the latest Toyota models, you'll also find a friendly and accommodating staff eager to assist you. You'll receive first-class attention, whether it be a service appointment, help picking out the right part for your Toyota, or test driving a new or pre-owned vehicle. Stop in and check out the 2024 RAV4 Hybrid, a beauty with a selection of 17 or 18-inch alloy wheels, an available two-tone roof, and a new enhanced 10-year hybrid battery warranty from the date of first use or 150,000 miles, whichever comes first. Whatever you're looking for, Peterson's expert staff will help you find the one that's right for you, all at competitive pricing and financing. Peterson strives to be the best in everything they do, and they will take care of you. If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, please give Peterson Toyota first shot at your business. Thanks, enjoy the show.
Yeah, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not bow. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Welcome, everybody, to Ram Nation Radio. I am Joel Cantalamessa, joined by Mike Rowe. In a second, we'll have our monthly conversation with Colorado State Athletic Director Joe Parker to get the latest scoop in Ramland. We'll get all your questions answered. Got a lot of them answered last month. There was a few lingering questions, and Mike and I have a bunch of stuff we want to know as well. So that'll be a good conversation. Unfortunately, we are coming off a day in which the Rams' nine-game winning streak came to a halt. Saturday, tough home loss, 64-61 to the St. Mary's Gales. They played their best game of the year. The Rams, as you know, have been shorthanded the last couple games without Josiah Strong, who broke his wrist, and Jalen Lake, who broke his finger, both players non-shooting hands. Those are two of the best perimeter defenders on the team, and we definitely could have used them on Saturday. St. Mary's got some big shots from guys who had not really shot well all season, and they were the difference. Coming into the game, Joshua Jefferson, Augustus Marcellonis, and Luke Barrett were a combined 16% behind the arc, and Saturday shot 39%. They were 5 of 13. In the manner of which they hit a couple of them were just big. Marcellonis finished with 18 points, Jefferson 16, and he also had 13 rebounds, a double-double for him. And meanwhile, the Rams were just 28% from behind the arc, and we just got two points from the bench. So it was not our best performance. Credit to St. Mary's. They mucked it up. They played a really physical game. We tried to match it, just did not play as well, didn't shoot as well as we had been. St. Mary's made bigger shots when they needed it. It was not the prettiest of games either. Not a lot of flow. We're sitting in the arena and just could not seem like there was any momentum. Every time the crowd would get loud, there would be a stoppage of play or a timeout, you know, a foul, whatnot. So, but yeah, it was a very physical game. Came up with a couple buddies who hadn't been to a game in a while. And they absolutely loved. And these are guys that were there during the Tiny era. And so a few years before me. They've been to Moby since then, obviously, but it's been a couple year, few years since they've actually been to a CSU game, and they were just in awe of the Moby Madness and the raucous crowd, and very excited about that. But we were all kind of commenting on the play of the game with the way St. Mary's plays. They really are physical. They grab you. There's a lot of times it seems like they could have been fouled or called for fouls, and they weren't. But they played as if they were. Their season was on the line. Come into the game at 4-5. They needed a good win for their metrics. And the Rams played hard despite, you know, what Nico said. They were running on fumes. They're banged up with obviously missing the two guys. Zay has been hurt with a hip pointer. Pat's been hurt with his back. Bembo was hurt. He didn't play very many minutes. I think he played 7 minutes in the game and not his best. And I just think going forward here, the next 2-3 games, you probably need to give Kyan Evans and Tavy more minutes than they did get. I think they got upwards of 20 minutes on Saturday, but Zay played 37 minutes, and he's been doing that in almost every game. And he played well. He 20 points, but he also had 6 turnovers, and he looked a little tired to me. So he's getting a lot of minutes, and he doesn't come off the court. And to credit to him, his stamina is unbelievable. But you can tell there's some times when late in the game he's dragging a little bit. Missed a couple free throws as well, where he just looked like he didn't have the legs under him. It was a tough game for Joel Scott. He just could not get into a rhythm on the court. He was 0 for 4 from the floor. He picked up three fouls. I think he only had 2 points on free throws. So not his best when he kind of needed him. Nick Clifford finished with 16 points. He really gave the boost with a couple dribble drives, getting to the rim. Had a big dunk that had the crowd going, but he also missed a couple other big dunks that clanged off the rim that would have really blown the roof off of Moby had he made them. Would have really given the crowd a boost, sent everybody into a frenzy. But I gotta say, the crowd was electric again. It was another sellout, second straight, which is fantastic. The students have been unbelievable. Credit to them, and hopefully the rest of the general public starts hopping on board. I think it's just amazing when Moby is full like that and rocking. It is fun. I really think we got hosed on a couple calls. One late, Pat Cartier, who went straight up on a late in the shot clock floater by Aiden Mahaney. Mahaney's kind of his momentum. There's like probably a second left on the shot clock, and then he jumped up and kind of put this floater up and missed. But his momentum carried him into Cartier. He jumped, but he was going straight up with his hands straight up. And Mahaney made contact with him after the shot was released and got a foul call. And so he made one of two, which gave St. Mary's a 3-point lead. But that's a big difference than the Rams having the ball down two. I mean, you like your chances there, because we had not been shooting three well, gives you a chance to go for a two there to tie the game. And then St. Mary's delivered that dagger before the clock expired. And there was another one where there was a loose ball. They lost the ball with 2 seconds left on the clock. The officials awarded them the ball. We're feeling pretty good because there's only 2 seconds left on the clock. We defended for about 4.5 seconds on the inbounds. And the inbounder found Jefferson on the wing for a wide open three. Joel Scott was a little late in closing that out. And Jefferson made a three, and he came into that game just 2 of 26 on the year. And he goes 2 for 5 from behind the arc, including that one. So it was a missed opportunity, as the Rams surely would have surged into the top 10 in the polls. As it is, it wasn't a huge drop. They dropped to 17th and 18th in the coaches and AP polls. They dropped into the 20s in the net rankings after the loss. But as of last night, after Monday night's action, they are back to number 16 in net. That's obviously very fluid, moves around every day. But also of note, Washington beat Gonzaga 78 to 73 on Saturday. What a big win for Washington. Makes that win look so much better for CSU. It already looked good, but that it makes it all the much better. And then CU walloped top 15 Miami by 27 on the road. What in the world? And they did that without their star. So the Rams resume just keeps getting better and better. They have this week off, 8 days off between games, and it is much needed. They host CSU Pueblo on Sunday. I think this time off should do the team really good. And as I mentioned, Nico has said multiple times the team is kind of running on fumes emotionally and physically. They're also banged up, obviously. I don't think they're going to get Jalen back for Sunday. I don't even know why you would rush him back for CSU Pueblo, but it would be great if he came back for Loyola Marymount. But there's a chance he just sits out the final three conference regular season non-conference games and comes back for the for league play. So, following Sunday's game versus the Thunderwolves, the Rams will have 5 days between their next game, and that one is at Loyola Marymount before closing the regular season December 29th versus Adams State. So, after a grueling non-conference slate, the Rams are going to play just 3 games in 20 days. So, that'll be good for them. Loyola Marymount is key to finishing the non-conference schedule with a very impressive 12-1 record. If they could do that, man, that would be great. It won't be easy, though. The Lions are 6-4. They have won 4 of their last 5, including a 78-75 win over UNLV in the Jack Jones Classic event on Saturday. That was in Henderson, Nevada. But they've got a couple games before we roll into town. They play UC Santa Barbara and Detroit Mercy here in the next week. But if you could finish 12-1 with this schedule, you get a quad two win over Louisiana Tech, a quad two over ACC foe Boston College, a 21-point quad one blowout win over Creighton from the Big East. They're currently number 5 in net rankings. Amazing win that was. a quad two win over rival CU, and that could very well be a quad one eventually by some point in this year, because they are close to getting to that mark. And then a quad two win over Washington, which also could end up as a quad one as well. They're currently 5 spots away from that being a quad one. Yes, the loss to St. Mary's is a blemish, a quad three loss, but that is a team I can see continuing to win throughout the year. They'll roll through most of their league play. They'll probably rise to a quad two by season's end. So not the most damaging loss. And everybody knows St. Mary's. It's a brand name now, and they play tough basketball. So it was not the end of the world there. We all wanted to roll through the non-conference unblemished, but unfortunately that didn't happen. You know, we all get caught up in these rankings because they're fun, the net rankings, the AP, the coaches. But honestly, to me, you know, this daily monitoring of the ranking is just, I mean, I don't even really care that much. It's so cool to see us there, but I just want to see us keep playing a good brand of basketball, get guys healthy. And what I want this year is a Mountain West title. I was a freshman in 1991. I missed the Tiny Era by 1 year. I have not seen a Mountain West title outside of the 2003 tourney run. And it's about time we have the team to do that. And lastly, it just stinks to see Dallin Holker leaving. He posted that he's going to the NFL draft next year. That's going to be a setback. I hope Torrey isn't next, but that's a definite possibility. Kind of makes this flop of a season that much more difficult to stomach. You know, losing key pieces going into next year, I think it's going to make breaking out next year that much tougher. But all right, before we bring in Joe Parker, let me pause real quick and tell you about Ginger and Baker. They were recently voted the best wedding rehearsal dinner venue by NoCo Style Magazine and their Best of NoCo 2023. If you've ever been to Ginger and Baker, you'd know why. This place is first class in everything they do. Stop in for an amazing dinner at the Cache where you can enjoy fine steaks and chops, good whiskey, or select from their award-winning wine list. If you're looking for a more casual dining outing, check out the cafe with their wide offering of American comfort food classics. Ginger Baker also features a coffee shop, event spaces, and a teaching kitchen, the latter of which has got a ton of great events all month long. They are very popular. They fill up quick. There's a macaron madness, a pot pie, a tamale class, and a kids baking class all in the next week, and they're all jam-packed, sold out. But they do have some other classes coming up, the ugly sweater cookie decorating class, chocolate explosion pie class, and a bunch of others later this month, including the New Year's Eve surf and turf class. That sounds amazing. Check out gingerandbaker.com/calendar for a full list of events. If you're still Christmas shopping, check out the market for great gift ideas. Everything is decked out in holiday decor. Get in there and check it out. This place is amazing, guys. Support our friend Ginger Graham and treat yourself to a world-class experience at our favorite place, Ginger and Baker. All right, happy to bring in CSU Athletic Director Joe Parker. Joe, seems like yesterday that we just had you on in November. Another month has flown by. We're almost to Christmas, which is hard to believe. How are you doing?
Right, Joel. You're right. It has been a busy few weeks since we were last together, but that's just the nature of it. We're beyond crossover season, though, so we're now just focused on basketball at the moment. So that's
Yeah.
good.
Well, coming off a tough loss for the men's hoops team on Saturday, but you have to be impressed with the product that has been put on the court, both for men and women, quite honestly. But the men in particular, and then the response from the fans and the students especially, how has that been seeing? Obviously, the winning helps, but just seeing efforts that you guys have been putting in and now seeing the response with Moby being packed. Two games in a row.
Yeah, we always do our very best to prepare for, for this, when you have success. So I'm proud of the way that both of those teams are playing, which has certainly amped up fan engagement. I've got a book on my bookshelf. It's a buddy of mine wrote in sports marketing. It says, winning is not a strategy. And I would have to say winning is the only strategy, I think. So that seems to be what really motivates people to engage around programs. And it's obvious when you see what's happening with our men's basketball team right now. But what you do have to do is get, ready for that moment. And I think we've done a really nice job with all of our external areas to get prepared for that in the way that we do present, the game execution and those things. And
And what's also revealed too is that Moby's a building that was built in 1966, 1967, and it's so when people offer thoughts around how we can do better, I mean I hear them, I do, but the concourses are limited to the existing square footage. We have one surface lot that's identified for the building that we use our primary parking area. And when the building's full, and I'm not going to complain about that, it puts strains on and it reveals those limitations.
Obviously, I love Moby. It's a great arena. It's awesome when it's full. Last week, 7,100 against DU on a Wednesday night, sell out on Saturday, loud. But as you said, we need some upgrades. We need VIP areas. We need boxes. Definitely need a new sound system. That doesn't sound like Charlie Brown's teacher trying to talk to us, you know. Now that we got the very much needed renovations to our locker rooms, we got the new floor. What's next?
I think one, we've got President Parsons, who's really interested in continuing to enhance this campus, not only elements of the campus that support athletics, but other important academic areas of the institution. And so I'd say just stay tuned. I think there's some interest in understanding what the long-term needs for a public assembly facility would be, whether that's a renovation of Moby or a brand new facility. But I think there's going to be some study and some effort placed around that to really begin to understand what the feasibility would be, kind of a master plan of that. I like you, Mike, I love Moby. I think it's got such a good feel about it. And what's different about Moby versus Hughes, and I've talked about this before, is that, because Moby sits right on campus and it's been used more than 6 Saturdays a year, Hughes was, had that limitation. There's been consistent deferred maintenance put into the building. So I mean, all the kind of hard infrastructure of the building has been well maintained. Now, some of the other elements, as you pointed out, like the sound system and maybe even, some of the LED elements, they're starting to age a little bit and need some tender loving care. But and the fact that we did put between phase one and phase two of the locker room project for basketballs, the basketball programs and the other sports that are housed in Moby, we put almost $15 million into locker room renovations in the last, 2 years, 28 months. So I don't think I want to just evaporate that by, taking a new building approach. What I've seen in my experience in college sports is, if you got a building like Allen Fieldhouse at KU, if you got Galarraga at Oklahoma State, if you got Moby Arena here at Colorado State, there may be a nice balance between, trying to do a project that preserves all the good positive things about that facility, but then upgrades it so that it feels like a more modern facility as it serves the people that are in the building, particularly when you're at a sellout. I love the capacity. I don't think we need much bigger or any bigger. You pointed out the idea that premium seating, we're sold out on club seats. We have been for the last 3 seasons. So there's obviously interest for a higher end experience beyond just, sitting in the ordinary chair backs. So I think there's some interesting things that can be done probably to make it a modernized facility that would serve for the next 3 decades. So stay tuned. I think there's some interest in trying to queue a project up and see what we could do. But in any case, it's going to cost, it's going to take resources. So we're going to, if that's the direction that we're going to go, we've got to make sure that the fan base understands that and gets mobilized around it.
And so, and listen to you talk, it's exciting just to kind of think of the possibilities. But what are possibilities? There's only so many things you can do. I mean, we've had a bunch of questions on this. Someone asked, how would you add premium seating? How would you make the concourses bigger? Does that require popping the top off? Does it require blowing out the side of the concourses and extending that out to the out or what would currently be outside, and where would premium seating go? Would you build some balconies into the corners, you know, those kind of things? Is that anything that you guys have thought about, or is it you need to get an architect in here and a designer to kind of figure out what you can do?
Yes, yes, and yes. But no, we haven't engaged anyone formally to kind of help plan on it. But you know, when I mentioned Allen Fieldhouse and Gallagher Iba, you know, they didn't overdo premium seating in those spaces, you know, but what they did do is they did the things that you referenced too in your remarks, where they expanded the envelope of those buildings to make it easier for people to circulate and you know, and then seek, you know, services from the amenities, you know, concessions and just access to the things that people want. And I don't know, I don't think with Moby that we'd want to overload premium seating. You know, I think you know, Bob Davis Hall, if you got access to the courtside club, it's a packed space. It is. It's you know, so I could see us wanting to expand those type of opportunities. You know, Nico for the last three seasons has done the round ball club, and that's been, you know, we used, you know, the old Joey Porter locker room, and now that space has been you know, converted into the new student lounge and fueling station for the student athletes that utilize Moby, and that's tight space. So you know, I think there's got to be ways for us to think, you know, about creating hospitality areas that aren't necessarily directly attached to the game experience itself, but give a place for people to be hosted and entertained pregame, halftime, and even postgame. You know, I'd love to see us over time develop, you know, some kind of programming that you know, is attractive enough that people would want to stick it out. Now, you know, depends on tip time. You know, you get too late, you know, people want to get home and get rested for the next day. But you know, it's things to be talked about in the future, things that we've talked about here already, but you know, winning programs make you think about it more and more and more.
You brought up the sound system. We hear it all the time on Ram Nation, and I actually had not really noticed the issue with it until, because I think in my seats, which are behind the visitor bench, it's not horrible. But on Saturday, we had sat across from the CSU bench, and it was a drastic difference. So I don't know if it was the acoustics or where speakers are, but I did finally notice what the issue was. And I know you've heard it a million times. What kind of investment, just for the record, would it take to replace that? Are we talking six figures? Are we talking, you know,
I
five
think you're getting
grand?
close. You're probably getting close to seven figures. So
Wow.
when people want to snap their fingers or wave the magic wand, you know, give me that wand and I'll wave it, you know. But yeah, I'd love to be able to do it, you know, sooner rather than later. But you know, we need a sound financial model to make sure that it doesn't you know, hinder anything else that we want to do. So you know, it just takes time and resources, and we'll get there. You know, I'm confident we will, but you know, until then, you know, just
Just
you
sit
know,
back and enjoy.
show a little patience, and you know, your voices have been heard.
Would it
Is
be
this kind of like with Hughes, because it was so outdated that the technology it can't be just throwing up new speakers. There's got to be a wholesale change just to get that technology up to date.
You know, Mike, I don't know. I mean, we've had some outside consultants come in and just try and tweak the existing system. You know, we've done, you know, modest upgrades and just, you know, deferred maintenance. You know, as equipment has failed, we've replaced it. So at this point, it's not a comprehensive design system. You know, it's a bit of a Frankenstein. So, you know, I think that's probably hurting performance as well. But you know, to truly fix it, it would require, you know, us to engage someone that's going to come in and do a total redesign, a brand new install of a system. And what that solution looks like and what that solution ultimately costs, I don't know. I just know, you know, when you attempt these things, it's never it's always more than you might expect.
Is next season a realistic time frame if you were to come up with funds?
If we had funds, yeah, we could do anything. But that's the big question. And those are things that aren't easy to privately fundraise. But if you guys want to start a GoFundMe account and Ram Nation responds, we'll take care of it. I'll put it on Ram Nation. You guys, okay? You want a new sound system? Activate the bass. Make sure that they come through, and we'll do it.
So you don't need just a couple grand for this?
I told you what I think we need. So, and I'm not saying just
Well,
you guys. There's a whole group of people that have great thoughts around how we can improve the place. So we're just asking for their help.
we'll go to Best Buy and see what they can do. Help us out on that.
We'll get up in the rafters, all three of us, and string some speaker wire and see what can come up with.
So this has come up a lot the last few weeks. With all the eyes on us, we used to have a very iconic and nationally known floor since the reflooring two seasons ago. Different paint job. Now it just seems like every court in the NCAA. Any thoughts about going back to the horns, or I know that they're there making them more pronounced on the next paint job.
The next paint job is going to be years from now, unless it's a part of a broader renovation. But I don't know, rightly or wrongly, you've got to make decisions, and everyone's going to have an opinion about, where you land. I've heard enough people affirm that they like the new court design. I think our most iconic brand representation is the Rams Head logo. We tried to emphasize that in this design. The horns are used, but I don't think, unless you're a Ram, you don't really understand them as well as, people that are outside. So, we wanted to lighten the floor up. I think I've watched some of the games broadcast, and I think it really highlights the play on the court. I think it makes it easy for people to watch the movement of players and ball movement. The horns are still there. They're just not as visible. And I'll, from my personal opinion, the horns are my least favorite part of the court. So, if people are looking to blame someone, just lay it on me. So.
You didn't want to go the Oregon route, really muck it up.
No, and Las Vegas. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's a basketball game. We want to highlight who we are, which the Rams Head logo does that. The other, Bank of Colorado is our partner on the court naming. We put Stalwart on there because we want to emphasize that as a part of a word mark that we're proud of, because I think that really talks to people about what it means to be a Ram. There's that grit and grind and blue collarness about who we are. So I think Stalwart is a perfect word, and that word mark is important to us. We brought consistent font with the Stratum font, which is the Under Armour font that we use on the uniforms, that articulates the Colorado State, on the baseline. So, I mean, again, I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that can find reasons to criticize it and feel like we should have done something different. But, that we've got our design, and has it been down 2 years or 3 years now? I can't remember.
This
This
is
is the
second,
second, the third season.
third season. Yeah. Where are you, Mike? Do you like it, or you want it something different? You want to go back to the older,
I wish the horns
more
were a little
dated?
bit more pronounced, but I love the font. I love the ends. It really pops. That's why just a little bit more pronounced on the horns,
Yeah.
I think would look great. But I do, I mean, everything else, exactly what you said. Love it.
It's a crisp floor. I have no problem with it. It's a crisp floor. It looks good.
I don't know. I haven't been on Ram Nation lately. Do I have an account, Joel? Did you give me an account? Do I have to pay to be on there?
And you do not have to pay for it. I could get you
Yes, you have to pay us.
an account. It'll just cost you a couple courtside seats. That's all.
What should be my handle? What should be my little avatar
Oh my
that I
goodness.
work behind?
Let's see, what are some of the favorites that we hear, Mike?
Sleepy Joe.
Sleepy Joe.
That would be good.
I am tired sometimes. I need more rest. Yeah.
You're overworked. Hey,
what else? What's the next subject, guys? Let's go.
This has been really cool. Waking up every day, looking at the net rankings, you know, seeing us in the top 25 of the polls. It's, you can't really buy some of this exposure that we're getting, especially with some of the national talking heads. I mean, who was it? Doug Gottlieb that said last week he sees us as a top four team in the country. This is just, it's priceless stuff. But have you guys like kind of figured out, have you been able to put like, is this worth like, what kind of monetary value is CSU's name being in the top 25 and in national media at all times? Is that something you can quantify?
I'm sure you could probably hire some consultant that could, you know, figure out how to value the mentions. But these are moments that, you know, that I mean, you, intercollegiate athletics is important to this campus for a number of reasons, but that's one of them. You know, it helps to brand build, it helps to build exposure. You know, that in turn, you know, makes prospective students think more and more about this as a option for them. Particularly with out-of-state students, I think, you know, in-state, you know, obviously you'd imagine that awareness is much stronger. So anytime you can attract an out-of-state student and get them to come to campus, I mean, the net financial impact of that is significant for the university. So yeah, I mean, you know, these are moments where you want to, you know, hopefully continue them and build upon them and, you know, prove our worth to, you know, everyone that has, you know, some level of criticism about athletics and the amount of investment that occurs in athletics. But, you know, we're, you know, I've said a lot, you know, Canvas Stadium is a primary engagement asset for the institution. You know, I think athletics is really, you know, the primary, you know, brand awareness building entity of campus. You know, so many presidents talk about it being the front porch, and these are moments where, you know, the porch light is on.
You know, it's funny. It, like you said, it's experiences as well. And, you know, since I was a freshman in 1991, holy crap, I have not seen us win a conference championship. And got there right after the Tiny Boyd era. And, but we brought a couple buddies up to the game, who hadn't been there in years. And they track CSU basketball. They love CSU basketball. They just never come up. They're in Denver guys, South Denver guys. And they just could not get over the atmosphere. It reminded them of the old days of, you know, the tiny crowds that they had. And they could not stop raving. Obviously we lost, but they loved the brand of basketball we're playing, the atmosphere. So this is really doing wonders with galvanizing the fan base and giving experiences. It's also to the students. Keep them coming back. So it's a lot of fun.
It is. And like, you know, I said earlier in our conversation, you know, winning is the only strategy. I mean, I have never been more convinced about that. You know, when we ended up in the tournament and played Michigan that first game, you know, we had five sellouts, and that was only because, you know, our team was playing really, really well and had, you know, was at a moment where we were, you know, competing for the championship and a spot in the NCAA tournament. So, you know, I guess this is the answer. We just got to make sure we maintain this every year.
Now, you've shown in the past after the 21 and 22 seasons to really work with Coach Medved. You gave him extensions. You opened up the pool for his assistants after that 22 run. This is kind of different. We've been getting a ton of national exposure, a ton of talk, as Joel brought up earlier. Have there been any discussions on next steps with Coach Medved, or are we waiting so that he focuses on the season, so that he knows that for himself he's focusing on the season as opposed to what's going on down the line?
Yeah, there, Mike, there's a time and place for all of those conversations. You know, the way that extension that we did a few years back works is it was a five-year base, and then it had 3 1-year extensions in it. So you can only do 5 years as a full term, but those 3 1-year extensions were at either party's activation. So the first year, I think we activated it. The second year, Nico did, and there's still one more. So we could activate one more anytime after January 1st. And then that would put him in a full 5 year contract, you know, so he'd have 5 years remaining starting January 1st on his employment agreement with us. Now that's in the deal that we negotiated, you know, now I guess 3 years ago, I think it was. You know, so but you know, if the season continues and we move into conference play and we, you know, we're still having the kind of year that we always aspire to have, there's still an opportunity for us to, you know, just have a totally refreshed conversation about what the relationship should look like. And I would expect that, you know, that might be the way that things play out.
Well, the way that you've done this in the past, that means that there's going to be an extension announcement next week, because you're always pretty
very coy.
Actually, contract.
Hey, we had Nico on last week, and one of the things he had mentioned was he's talking about how the all-important first game of the Mount West schedule is New Mexico on January 2nd, and obviously the students are going to be gone. I think it's the only league game where the students are going to be gone, I think he said. Obviously that's going to be up to the general public and alumni to really kind of to step in for the students who may not be in out in full force for that game. Is there anything you guys have lined up as far as promotions or special plans to entice fans to get out?
I mean, it's a big hole to fill when the students are off campus. I mean, that's, you know, we rely on them for anywhere from 2,500 to 4,000 when there's, you know, a lot of student interest. So, you know, we'll, I would guess in the season that we're having, we'll probably find some of our Northern Colorado based students, you know, elect to be at the game. So that'll fill more than, you know, a bit of the gap. And then, you know, we'll run some special promos. I'll have to visit with Chris to see exactly what they've got queued up. But, you know, at this point too, you know, you don't, and I'm also convinced too, price is not where you go first and foremost to try and drive interest. You know, that you just, you know, when we can achieve a sellout in basketball, I mean, it's about $70,000 to the plus side of for the department, you know, so I don't think we wanted to do anything with the pricing model to diminish interest when we have, you know, students on campus and they can engage around the basketball program. And, you know, hopefully we can get through that one game and, you know, keep the attendance up. You know, Mike, you mentioned the fact that, you know, midweek game against DU, it's 7,100. I mean, that's, I'd have to look back, but that's other than times that we played, did I say CU or DU? DU.
You said DU.
Okay. Yep. Other than the times that we played CU, you know, I don't remember us having ever a non-conference game that has drawn that number. So I'm really encouraged. You know, we want to continue to kind of, maybe it's all about the beer and wine too. Maybe that's what's driving it. I don't know, but
it is a nice touch.
Yeah, it is, and it's how it's been. You know, I don't, obviously I can't have abide during a game. You know, I'm busy. It's work day for me, but what's been the experience as you try to buy a beer or a wine?
What do you mean? Amy, I saw Amy drinking wine courtside with Terrell Davis. So she can do it. You could do it.
Well, her responsibilities are a little bit different on the game day. She's in full hospitality mode entertaining Terrell Davis. But, you know, there may be a moment where I've got to intervene, you know, and I want to make sure that I've got all my wits about me.
I think it's been great being able to bring it to the seats for sure. You definitely got to find the right time to get in line to get a beer because the lines are long, but it is wonderful to just have a beer with me at the seat, and it's a good thing.
And as the so-called petting zoo, it has been a lot less busy because people could go on the concourses and get them. So that's opened up that. So it's a lot more enjoyable to actually see the action on the floor. So I think it's been great.
Yeah, that's all good. Love that feedback.
All right, so switching gears from Moby and basketball.
We need to talk a little bit about women's basketball before we...
That's Mike's department. Mike.
Joel was supposed to ask something about that first question on the gate.
We brought up the 8-0. What? Yeah, I mean, talk about Ryan Williams and the job he's doing in McKenna Hofschild.
Yeah, you know, Ryan is... You know, he's moving in that sphere of dean of coaching, kind of with his tenure here, you know, Bedard, you know, when Tom retired, Bedard handed the, or rather Tom handed the baton off to Bedard, but, you know, for arena programs, you know, Ryan has been here a long stretch, better than a decade. He's done incredible work. You know, it just, it shows when you have strong leadership, and you stick with it. You know, there was a dip a while back, but, you know, I mean, he's kind of restructured the roster in a different way. You know, when he first got here, it was a big focus on internationals, not so much now, more domestic players. And you know, with a small roster size, you know, you can't make many mistakes. And certainly, you know, having McKenna Hoffschild here has been a remarkable reward for CSU basketball and the fans that support that program. And she's meant so much to this, you know, probably in our history, maybe only second to Becky Hammon, you know, and the fact that they're both undersized players is a nice thing to kind of play on too. But excited about what's ahead. You know, they've got a lot of want to in this season to prove, you know, that they can be, you know, one of the most, if not the most competitive program in the Mountain West. And you know, since I've been here, the women's team has only made the NCAA tournament once. So that'd be pretty special if we can figure out a way in this year where, you know, McKenna's having a great year and the other teammates are as well, that, you know, we make it into the tournament. But to do that, you got to win. Got to win the automatic qualifier, which is the tournament play in Las Vegas. So that's what one thing we need to start talking about right now. And you guys, I'm going to hold you responsible. Let's do our very best to sell out our allotment at the Mountain West tournament. You know, that's something that we should challenge ourselves to do. You know, there's enough people that love CSU that if they just circle that time period, you know, to structure a Vegas trip around, that'd be awesome. So we need to start thinking about that. So every day between now and tournament time, you guys need to drum up a post about attendance at Las Vegas and see if we can make it happen.
It's a good call out.
We got to focus one game at a time. Can't look in the
No. We can do both these things concurrent, Mike. We can support the regular season, and we can point to what's ahead, because, you know, that's where we gotta show up. Both teams have got to perform at that tournament, and fans are gonna matter.
I do like that, because we have not done historically a good job selling tickets for that, and it is an awesome time out there at that event. So and it should be a great tournament this year. The Mount West is really good. All right, and I want to also mention, because you talked about Ryan Williams and the fact that, you know, he did have a couple dips of a year, a couple years there. But it just kind of shows you in this fire culture where you have one bad year, everyone's looking to fire somebody. And I think there's something to be said for continuity and sticking with the staff and not turning over a roster every couple of years. So that's a good example of a guy who's just kind of stayed consistent and done things the right way. And hopefully he can keep it going here this year. Three more games, including an SEC opponent coming to town December 20th, Mississippi State. So good stuff going on both sides of basketball. Yeah,
absolutely.
How great of a partnership is that Mountain West Network? I haven't been up for a women's game, but I've watched almost I think I've missed one game so far this season just by able to stream it. So how important is that for getting the brand out, especially for sports like volleyball and women's basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I'd hate to be doing our jobs without access to, you know, those broadcast opportunities to get it out on a stream, you know, and it is a true partnership, Mike. You know, we do all the, you know, game production with our staff, our broadcast services staff, and, you know, we've got a new leader in that area, Jerem, who's done a tremendous job. He came to us from Missouri, so he's kind of resumed the model that Ben Bruin had built that, you know, we do it primarily with students. You know, we've got a handful of full-time employees in that space, but, you know, we don't do too much with freelance, but we're able to really offer bona fide practical experiences to students. And that's another really service that we feel compelled to provide to the university to give students those opportunities. But, It's meaningful, and you know, we continue to work to build the brand of the Mountain West Network, and that's, you know, an option that we're always going to turn to for our Olympic sport programs and women's programs. So that gives us a great way to highlight and build the brand of those teams.
All right, now switching gears. So last week he was made official. But can you give us any updates about the new Pac-2 Mountain West scheduling agreement?
Yeah, it, you know, it's the release was pretty clear, but I'm happy to kind of explain it. You know, so obviously those two schools still have a very strong interest in trying to remain or maintain their autonomy as a league. And that sounds unusual. You know, how can you have a two-member conference? But in the case of FBS, so Football Bowl Subdivision, you have 2 years to cure what as they refer to it. So they have 2 years to try and get their conference back to a minimum of 8 members. And so they wanted some time to try and look through options to possibly do just that. In order to do that, they needed games to play in 2024, which, you know, obviously the 23 season's over, so we're less than a year from playing football in the 24 season. So they made an approach and started a conversation with Gloria Navarez, the commissioner of the Mountain West, and we had interest as a league to try and, you know, help them, but more than help them, probably try and build a framework that could bridge to a future that might include them on a permanent basis. So what we've done is we've agreed to 1 year, a scheduling alliance where we, all the existing members of the Mountain West, have agreed to reduce our conference schedule by one. So we're going to play 7 conference games, and then that plus one additional spot will play either Washington State or Oregon State in either a home or away. And by doing that, that gives both of those schools 6 games from the scheduling alliance. So they then have the 3 games in their non-conference schedule. So they have a total of 9. They'll play each other, obviously. So that gets them to 10. So how they fill their two final spots is really up to them. You know, are they, you know, there is an option for them, I think, too, to play each other twice in a home and away. That'd be highly unusual, very unorthodox, but then that would put it where they've only got one game to fill to get to their 12. So that keeps them, you know, viable for the 24 football season. To do that, we asked for financial consideration, and the number that was agreed upon was $14 million. That's going to the league office. The league will, you know, there might be some hard costs associated with this, you know, related to, you know, I don't know, replay, officiating, other things. You know, it'll be minimal. And then that net number would then be divided amongst our existing membership. So it'll be a boost to the FY25 budget year for us. We're doing it in football only. The doors open a little bit for some discussion around basketball, although I think most of the ADs would move in that direction very cautiously. And I think they're also exploring options within the West Coast Conference to fill out a basketball schedule. And then we've agreed on 1 year. We'll assess it, as you know, through the fall and decide if we want to do it again in 25. But, you know, hopefully we'll figure out a way to, you know, to make a permanent integration of the conference, and just, you know, I think they're, you know, they want to keep options open, and this is a way to keep those options open. But eventually I think those options are going to get narrowed, where they recognize that if they're going to play football in the Western United States, that they've got to be aligned with those of us that are in the Mountain West.
When will we know which Mountain West team will be removed from our schedule, and whether we'll play Oregon State or Washington? Would that be a road game or a home game? And is there any risk of losing our 7th home game?
Some of us know already, Joel, but
you can't share.
I can't share. No.
Joe, give us a scoop.
I can't.
We won't tell anybody.
No, they've started to develop, you know, what will likely be the 24 schedule for all of the Mountain West teams, and, you know, that would incorporate the scheduling alliance. I think it'll be closer to the traditional football announcements. So you're looking at March, April, probably. I'm not sure if the conference office has a plan to do it any sooner. You know, they want to get the input from the TV partners, you know, but I think what's been shared with us is probably likely to be what will transpire. So, you know, we know who we play and we know where we play. So
any chance that we lose a home game or anything like that, or is that those numbers stay the same?
No, okay. No chance.
Still,
of that.
Still got our 7 home games next year.
Yep. Still got our 7 home games. And as a reminder to Ram Nation, okay, this is our little infomercial. And again, this is a little task for you all. Every week you need to make mention that we are playing this game from, or a team from Boulder next year. So tickets are going to be tight in football. Season tickets are always the best option. They set the price. They set the market. They were $130 last year. We're $130 this year for an individual game ticket. If you could even buy an individual game ticket for that event. So think about season tickets, great value in that. And you should continue to share that with Ram Nation. Great opportunity for us to sell out the season if we can make it happen.
Absolutely. Hey, I saw a report last week or the week before that Texas Tech is breaking their agreement to come to Fort Collins.
I think they're exploring. You know, Kirby called me a month ago or so. We were talking about some other stuff. And, you know, he mentioned that there's interest on their campus at consistently hosting 7 home games. And so to do that, they'd have to, you know, look at unwinding at least their trip here. But nothing's been finalized. You know, there's obviously some financial implications if they do that that work to our favor, you know, so I don't know. I haven't talked to him in those and since we had that first conversation. And then I did see some of the media reporting out of Lubbock. So I know that they're exploring it. And, you know, because of that, we're going to make sure that we've, you know, understand our optionalities too.
So if they make that move, if that happens, are there teams that you have on speed dial? Programs you have on speed dial that we could fill? And also, what about after 2027? We're full up till then, not much past that.
Yes, you know, we've already started to look at, you know, if that's the direction that Texas Tech decides to go, you know, what are our options? How do we replace those games? And then yes, Mike, we've already started to look beyond where our current schedule is filled out. It's going to be interesting, you know, as people absorb this latest round of conference realignment. You know, what do they decide to do with their conference schedules? What becomes their institutional or conference scheduling philosophies? You know, where does that leave, you know, the availability of some of the games that we've enjoyed so much? You know, hopefully we can continue to, you know, schedule as we have, you know, with, you know, we didn't have a guaranteed game this year, but, you know, we will, you know, moving forward. And that's always important to our budget. I think it's also important to just get our fans out, you know, to visibly see, you know, what the experience is at other places and hopefully feel, you know, we learn from it, you know, as a staff, and it gives our players an opportunity to see iconic places and play those games. We're at Texas next year. Remember that, folks? So that'll be one that most people should circle and think about. And again, the best way to get a Texas ticket is to be a season ticket holder. The only way to get a Texas ticket may be to be a season ticket holder. So just things to think about, you know, as we mature as a program, you know, it's going to be much easier to have access to the things that you want if you're a season ticket holder.
We locked down our Airbnb at the Utah Tech tailgate that day, so we're ready.
Good, good. It'll be a fun day. Austin's a great place to watch a game. You know, my 5 years there were, you know, a lot of fun. A lot of things have changed since then, but you know, if you're going to do it, you got to start planning now.
And your pal Chris Del Conte is there. Maybe you could throw us a big party.
Yeah, you know, Chris is always good for some fun, so...
Maybe a let us win.
There'll be no let, but we will earn the victory. We will earn the victory.
All right. I like it. A couple more here for you, Joe. With the downfall of the Pac-12 and one less autonomous conference, you could see it coming from a mile away. I think we touched on it a little bit last month, but the money-hungry ADs and presidents have now pushed, instead of a 6-6 playoff model, it's this now 5-7, meaning that the champs from the four autonomous conferences plus the top team in the G5 will get the automatic bids. Did you know that that was going to happen, and just could see it coming? And is that fair? Was there any sort of uproar between the G5 commissioners and presidents and ADs at all, or is it just like, wait, this is going to happen, there's nothing we could do about it?
Yeah, the voting model is structured such that, you know, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to change the momentum of whatever the A5 at one time, now the A4 decide is in the best interest of college football. But I also think too that, you know, Commissioner Sankey, especially, you know, he is, well, and Jim Phillips. So of the two commissioners, they're the ones that came from traditional backgrounds, you know, that had, you know, really only in their histories, you know, college sports. In the case of Jim, you know, he was attached to a campus for a long, long time, so he knows, you know, the challenges and opportunities that the daily practitioners experience. So I think those two voices will, you know, for at least this near term, recognize and advocate for the value of having every FBS playing school with a clear pathway to the playoff. And for me, that's what I've always said in every national meeting that I've been a part of. Anytime I can have dialogue with influencers, you know, that door has to be open. You know, that needs to be a option for everyone that has the aspiration to play FBS football to at least fulfill that aspiration of touching into the playoff. And I hope that never changes. I hope that never changes.
So I have one last question, Joe. What are your thoughts on the FSU being left out of the college football playoff? Undefeated, they were number four in the rankings the week before. They win their conference title, and then they drop down to fifth. What are your thoughts on that?
I think with only four teams, it's really difficult, and you're always going to disappoint someone. You know, the job of the committee is to put the four very best, most competitive teams that have the highest opportunity to earn a national championship through that format in the game so that we can see just that happen. Florida State, you know, I feel for them. I get it, you know. They did everything that they were supposed to do by finishing a regular season and their conference championship game undefeated as an A4 member. But they're a different team, I think, without some of the personnel. And that's what's really hard, right? And I know that wasn't a widely discussed criteria on how, you know, the committee might make a decision, but you know, I was talking to one of my swimmer buddies who is struggling with it. He lives in Tallahassee. He's a faculty member there now, but he and I went to school at U of M together. And, you know, now this is ancient history, but, you know, you Stanford won a lot of titles when I was at swimming, and Texas did too. And you take any one of their, you know, multi champions out of the mix, and they wouldn't have been the same team. So I think that's kind of how the committee looked at it, is that, you know, without a high performing quarterback like Florida State had throughout the entire most of the regular season, that, you know, the playoff was going to look really different for them. So feel for them, but, you know, also feel for the job the committee had to come up and make a decision
Last thing for me,
with.
so the Mountain West champion was again not an option for a New Year's Six bowl. League has been good, but it's kind of sucky to see the AAC, Sun Belt, and even Conference USA teams being selected ahead of us. Obviously, that's going to change next year with the ability to have a 12-team playoff and the ability if you play yourself in if you have a good year. But it seems like our basketball side of things really has got this formula where at least the last several years, we've been really attractive to the net rankings. We've got this non-conference formula, scheduling formula. It seems to be working for a lot of teams, and it's set us up for good postseason berths. Is there been any talk, like, is there anything that the Mount West could do differently to enhance their chances? Or is this just a matter of, we got to start winning the bigger games and not dumping two or three games in a season, because there's no way you're going to get in with that.
Yeah, I think like I said before, twice now on this podcast, winning is the only strategy. So I think we've done everything with scheduling that we possibly can to put our teams in a position to gain national recognition, you know, in basketball and in football. But you just got to win games. You got to win those games, or make them close enough that, you know, that they're neutral and not negative.
Well, Joe, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time again. Hope you have a great Christmas and New Year, and hopefully we'll run into you at the next Hoops game.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys. Go Rams.
Go Rams.
All right. Many thanks to Joe Parker, as well as my partner, Michael Rowe. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great rest of your week, and thank you for supporting RamNation.com. Go Rams.